Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Dave Martino is here. Thank God you're back. You know, everything was down, Facebook, everything, and thank God you came back and fixed it all.
That's right.
You're the one.
Just by my presence.
I know. How do you do that? You're an amazing person.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
They only knew you were behind everything.
Yes.
You know.
What's behind all the conspiracy theories?
You're caused everything. You do it all.
Yeah. I unplugged Meta.
You unplugged it. Yeah. Well.
All of Meta.
Yeah. That was me. You tripped over the cord.
I tripped over the cord.
It's probably more like it. You know. Strange. Strange days are coming.
That's right.
Well, anyway, speaking of strange, you know, we get all sorts of strange people that come into the House of Mystery, and we've got another one today. So the new book, Owen O'Shea, Stay-at-Home Dad, Wannabe Detective. It's a novel, and the author is with us, Mr. C. McGee. So thank you for being here, C.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Well, so why would any sane, rational person want to be a writer?
That's a good question. I don't know if you want to be as much as you kind of like have to be, right? Like once it gets into you, it's like a itch you have to scratch, something like that. So I suppose I started in earnest and seriously writing after my soccer career was done. So yeah, don't think that's an accident. I played soccer in college, realized ultimately far too late about my senior year that I wasn't going to be able to play at the next level. And I needed something to shoot for that was difficult and I might fail at. I've always kind of needed something to strive for that I could plausibly fail at. And so, yeah, why not write? I mean, that's a world of rejection right there. So dove into that.
So you want to be a failure?
I mean, I think it makes the successes more sweet, right? If you just keep on getting pounded with the failures and then you get a win. It feels more earned, all right? So that's good. That's where I'm coming from anyways. That's my positive spin.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I love being pounded too. But listen, so detective, mystery, like what kind of book would you call this if someone asked, say, well, what kind of writing do you do? What would you say?
I mean, for this one, it's definitely a mystery. It's pretty straightforward mystery. Amateur sleuth thing going on here. It's not cozy, though, in that the humor is a little darker and it's a little bit more graphic. And there's a little bit of violence and sex and stuff like that, which you won't get in a cozy mystery. But it does have the fun amateur sleuth element that is prominent in the whole cozy mystery genre. So, yeah.
So, how much violence and sex is there? Like, is it like is it kind of R-rated, X-rated? How would you kind of level say that it is?
Oh, good question. Well, I mean, it's not Saw, you know what I mean? I'm not making a gross horror film. I would say it's in between PG-13 and R. There's, you know, some swear words and a little bit of sex, not much. And then violence is, I'm not afraid to put violence on the page, but I also don't like focus on it. So if it's there and it's part of the action that's transpiring, I'm going to include it and usually try and take like a humorous spin on it. But I'm not going to devote, you know, page after page to it or anything like that.
Right. Are you conscious of the reader then? Are you thinking of that about them as you put that together, or what you decide to put in? Are you thinking about a reader?
That's interesting. I would say for my first two books, I definitely was absolutely not thinking of the reader, because they are super, they're pretty bombastic. They're definitely R-rated. But with this one, I knew I had, I think, a larger audience potentially, and the kind of outrageous humor wasn't the main point. The main point was to have a page-turning fun mystery that a wide variety of people would enjoy sitting down and reading. So I definitely still include some dark humor elements and stuff like that, but I was conscious of when I felt like I was going too far and maybe unnecessarily alienating readers that would potentially enjoy it. So more aware of the reader this time than in the past.
Are you trying to say something in your books? Because this is fiction, so this is a created story. Is there kind of a subtext or an underlying theme that you put in a book, even if it happens organically?
I would say the first two a lot. This one is much more just, I wanted to have fun. I feel like there's a lot of serious stuff in the world right now. I wanted it to be escapist and fun. Is there small commentary about, like, finding yourself as a parent? Sure, yeah. And, like, finding who you are if you stop working and you start staying at home. There's things along those lines, but nothing profound or super deep. It's more, I want to entertain the reader for, you know, a few hours and have them have a good time.
And humor has to be, you have to be careful with humor, right? Especially when you're talking about involving murder, you know, even if it's a fiction, even if it's not a real story. Do you think about placing humor? Like, is there a certain way you do it or a certain place you can and can't do it? I mean, it's got to be like timing of a, you know, stand-up comedian in a way.
No, I think it's even harder. Right? Because like a stand-up comedian has the benefit for the most part of the audience being in front of them and they're looking at it. And so their body language, they can give a nod and a wink. They can give the inflection in their voice, right, that delivers that it's clearly a joke. When you're writing humor, it's even trickier because sometimes sarcasm comes across as, you know, just straightforward honesty or whatever. And so when you're writing, you have to be much more deliberate about it. That said, like I'll make jokes about most things, as long as it's not too scandalous, right? So yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking for influences in the show that kind of try and hit the level, it's like, well, actually maybe TV shows might be the best reference point here. It's like a little bit more gritty than Only Murders in the Building, but a little bit less gritty than like Barry, the show that's about the assassin that, or the former, yeah, guy that turns assassin / becomes an actor to find himself. Yeah, it's somewhere in between those two.
Well, do you think with your humor, you're trying to, I guess, get to the truth of the human condition through your humor?
Ooh, that sounds profound and deep.
yeah, write that down.
Yeah, the truth of the human condition. I've always joked around a lot. Maybe to deal with reality. I mean, reality is serious and tough. If you don't make fun, it's just going to drive you crazy. So why not joke around and have a good time with it? I think you'll be a happier person overall. And I think I just apply that logic to my writing and my books as well. I mean, writing is this solitary task, and I like making jokes. So if I can do it while I'm writing, I'm going to make, you know, that 2.5 hours out of my day that much more enjoyable and fun. So, yeah.
I think it's a good thing. I think, and to be honest, I mean, again, I go into a lot of true stories and true crime, and I think that it's sort of a way of dealing with the tough things. You know what I mean? It's sort of an outlet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, who is Owen? Who is the main character in this story?
Owen is the first character I've written that is very much me. In some ways he was easy to write, and in other ways he was difficult. When it came to dialogue and stuff like that, I thought, what, when I'm at my best, would I say in this dialogue? And I just included it. Who he is, I mean, he's trying to find himself as a parent. So in the book, he's married to a successful physician, and she's off, you know, doing her thing most of the day. So he's the primary caregiver, and he's trying to figure out who he is in that role and reconciling The fact that he stopped being a soccer coach and became a full-time parent. What does that mean? What sort of parent does he want to be? All that sort of stuff. But also he's just having fun with his friends in the cul-de-sac that are also stay-at-home parents. So, yeah.
How do you see your character then? How is it? How do you interact with your character? Because we get all sorts of responses to that. Is it like a friend or family? Do you see that person? Do you hear their voices? Is it like watching a movie? Kind of where? How would you describe your interaction with Owen?
Oh, this one's definitely like point of view. Like, I put myself into Owen's shoes, and like as he's having a dialogue, I'm seeing the other characters from Owen's eyes, for sure. Versus in previous novels where I think the main character was less close to me, it was much more like, I guess in my head I was watching a television show, like a standard network sitcom where it's, you know, the camera that is there and you're looking in on what's transpiring and what's happening.
Right. Well, but when you do that, when you say this character is really close to you,
yeah,
and you're inside the shoes of this, and you're writing, and it's very, very personal and stuff. So you're putting all this out. This is published now, so anybody and their dog can pick up the book and read it. Does that feel a little bit vulnerable when you do that?
Yeah. I mean, no.
I mean, because you could say something in it that's very personal to you. Like, you could make Owen go through something, and you deal with it how you would deal with it. And you could put that in the story, and then Joe Blow down the road reads it and goes, oh, how stupid is that? Who would do that? And say something, one star, loser. You know what I mean? And then you're kind of like, oh, God. Because it's something, it's not just something you, a joke, but it's something that's meaningful.
No, absolutely. I think I'm a firm believer, though. You know, I try and make everything for, I mean, have the mindset that I'm okay with everything for everyone always. So I am who I am. I'm going to write what I'm going to write. Is everybody going to love it? Nope. Are some people going to judge me? Yep. But I mean, that's life. I think if you have a thin skin, you can't be a writer, right? You have to have like a thick skin. And I'm sure some people are going to read this. Probably some people in my cul-de-sac that are going to read this and not necessarily love it. And that's fine. I mean, I want to be friends with people that like me, and I want to interact with people that like me, and I don't want to intentionally alienate anybody. I want to be friendly with everybody, but at the same time, if somebody thinks something is stupid that I don't, I'm fine with that. Then
yeah. Well, we encourage those readers to send you a note.
Oh, yeah. Hate mail would be great.
Well, they're just not your tribe. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. I'm okay with that.
That's right. But since you base Owen on yourself, I guess, do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear your prose? Can you hear your characters? Is that how you create dialogue? Is that how you create the prose, or is there another way that you do it?
And, I mean, for dialogue, 100%. Dialogue comes easily to me for whatever reason. If I'm coming up on a scene that's going to have a lot of dialogue, it's going to go at like four times the pace that an action-based scene is going to go. I don't know why. I can just hear the conversation in my head, and I can hear what Owen was going to say, probably just, you know, because I like the sound of my own voice, so there's that. But yeah, I mean, so the dialogue is definitely natural, and then I just tighten it up, you know what I mean? Because a conversation like this is going to get unnecessary words, long-winded. Tighten it up, make it as tight as it can be and still seem natural, and then it's good to go.
Well, what do you find the best in writing? As in, when you're reading a book, what keeps you entertained or keeps you with the book until the end?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I do want it to be a page turner, and I want that. I think the pacing of the plot is the biggest thing, and there's not one answer there, right? But I think there are different answers for different authors, right? So you take somebody like, I don't know, Highsmith, and she writes like the Ripley books, right? And they're this slow boil in this just unbelievably, like you're on the edge of your seat for 200 pages away, even though not that much is happening. And she's amazing at it. I don't know how she does it. I applaud her for sure. She's great. But there's no way in hell I can do that. And then there's other authors that I think, you know, you better buckle up right away because it's like pedal to the metal, like David Wong and stuff like that. I am closer to that end of things, but not all the way over there. Yeah.
What? So are you planning on making this character into a series? Do you do that sort of thing, or do you stay away from that?
I have not I mean, both my previous books are standalones. I'm actually just finishing off another book that's completely different. It's actually a horror book, and that's standalone. That said, I definitely wrote this with the idea that it can stand alone on its own, but there is an opening for if I would want to continue it, and I have a clear path forward for a couple more, maybe two or three more, if I want to continue it. So I wrote it giving myself an out. So I just avoided the question of whether or not I wanted to make it a series by making the ending satisfying enough that it can stand on its own, but open-ended enough that I can add on another one or two or three if I want to.
What's your process? Do you actually allot time? Can you just sort of say, well, I'm going to write from 10 to 2 every day here and turn it on? Or do you have to be in a certain frame of mind?
I know. I just sit down and push. That's it. I mean, I sit down pretty much every day. At least 4 days a week, and I set a timer for 2 to 4 hours, depending on how many hours I have that day, and I just write, you know. And sometimes that's 200 words, and sometimes that's 2,000 words. That's it. If I didn't just set down time and then just do it, I'm not sure it would ever get done. If I just waited for the muse to strike, like, I don't know if that muse would ever appear. That would be wonderful, but yeah.
Well, how do you keep track of your continuity? Especially for a series, do you have a series Bible? Do you have a system? Do you have tools? How do you do that?
Well, I wrote a series Bible for this one, which is interesting you brought that up. I didn't even know that phrase until I started writing this book, and I started doing a little bit of research on if you do write a series, how do you go about this? And so I've you know, kept track of the characters' backstories and all the different things I said about them in case I do want to turn it into a series. And I do have a loose outline of the direction I would want to go in. So there's a ton of detail still to work out, but there is kind of this, you know, big artist size paper pad that I have, you know, long lines drawn on with vague plot points plotted out. So yeah.
Well, scientist, he's got the big, you know, he's got the chalkboard and everything in his room.
There you go. Well, I'm a social scientist by profession. I don't know if that counts. We're not real scientists.
No.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's interesting. Where do you get your extra characters, or where do accessories come into the story, or the people you know, or people you kind of seen or met, or someone at a coffee shop? Where do they come from?
I would be very hesitant to, like, make a person I know directly into a character. So it's interesting. You asked me if I thought about the reader. Generally, I usually don't. But I maybe intentionally don't just take somebody I know, give them a different name, and put them on the page. But I will take elements of their character and, you know, combine two or three different people into a new character. I also sometimes I'll just make somebody up out of whole cloth. Like, what is a person I would want to meet? Or who would be fun to hang out with in this situation, which is definitely what I did for this book. Like, one of the side characters, Riddy, is like just, she's a woman in this neighborhood. But I'm like, if I had to be home with a newborn all day, who would I want to hang out with? And I'm like, this woman would be super fun to hang out with. And then I just wrote her.
What time frame is this? Is this happening in modern times, or is this a different time area?
Nope. Yep. It's all contemporary. It's all happening right now. It's funny. When I started the book, I lived in a different house on just a regular street. When we moved, we did move to a cul-de-sac. And I was just telling my neighbors that, like, yeah, the novel's, you know, about a mystery in a cul-de-sac. And they were like, this cul-de-sac? It's not, but there are a lot of parallels there that end up just by chance kind of aligned with where I actually live. As far as setting goes, though, like, it's not specifically any city. I wanted it to be a suburbia that the vast majority of people that live in suburbia could relate to.
So do your new neighbors not talk to you?
we're still on a talking basis. So fingers crossed, a few of them have finished the book so far, and they're still all talking to me. So fingers crossed the rest of them finish it and then, you know, post thousands of good reviews online and tell everyone they know, and then we're still friends afterwards.
They haven't started a petition to have you removed from the neighborhood.
No, I'm just too likable. They can't get rid of me.
So when you're doing contemporary times and stuff like that, do you stay away from all of the tense things in today's life, like do you not bring in COVID and politics and all that sort of, you kind of stay away from all those subjects?
I did in this one for sure, on purpose, because I wanted it to be just a page turner and be fun and relatable without alienating any readers. Right now, I feel like we're at a point in time where if you do anything political, you're just going to immediately alienate a huge swath of people. And that's not what I wanted. I'm not saying that that's bad, but that wasn't the goal of this book. This book was, I think we need books that can be touchstones that everybody can enjoy and get together and talk about. It's great to have pieces of pop culture that everybody likes and brings everybody together. I think we need more common ground like that. And so hopefully just a fun mystery that's not political about anything can be one of those things.
Well, you can only hope that. But, you know, there's got to be some things in today's times that you can talk about without it being political, but it's tough.
Man.
Really tough.
It is tough. I mean, I'm a political science professor, so that's my job. So maybe I think writing, I also use it as an escape from having to talk about everything being political. But, man, I hope it's that there's things that are still political, but right now I feel like you can't even get, you know, food without being political. I like to eat Chick-fil-A and Ben and Jerry's at the same time, just to throw people off and confuse them.
Well, you know, yeah, the problem is you do some things without really consciously thinking underlying. Like if you go to Chick-fil-A, you're not, you know, you're in the rush, you're between jobs or doing something, and you run through the drive-thru or you do something, and you're not thinking about their politics.
Yeah.
But that move in itself can make someone who has more time upset.
Yeah, you're totally, you know, right. Oh, man. Now you got me, like, really spiraling, and it just seems almost impossible. But I do think, though, that's not the vast majority of people, right? I don't think the vast majority of people are thinking that way, but you're certainly right. There's a loud contingent that do, so.
Yeah, it's the noisiest people that are thinking that way. Not the majority. And then they're on TikTok and they're showing you on video.
Oh, man, the TikTok.
Calling you Karen.
Yes. What is the male Karen? I don't know what that one is. Hopefully not Caleb. Ken? That would be terrible because that's my name, so.
I think they call it, isn't it Ken or Kevin or something? Isn't it one of those? I don't know. Where do you see yourself going? Like, what's going to happen with Mr. McGee over the next 5 years, do you think?
Oh, I mean, become, you know, bestseller, win, you know, whatever, the Poe Award and the Nebula Award and all the other awards. No, I don't know. No, I just want to keep on writing. And ideally more readers read it. That would be great. I try and ground myself and make myself happy with the fact that, like, I've gotten novels published and people that I don't know read them. And that in and of itself is a huge win. You know, I think when I started writing, whatever, 10 years ago, I would have been super happy with that. So I try and remind myself of that. But obviously, yeah, if I can sell enough books that it becomes my main source of income, that would be spectacular. Although I think I would still teach. I like being a professor, at least part-time. Writing and being a professor and, you know, hanging out with my family. That's where I would like to be in 5 years. And the good news is that's kind of where I'm at now. Hopefully it's just with a little more books sold and a little more money in my pocket, you know.
Maybe get clean, too.
You're not supposed to mention that on the podcast. That's our secret.
Well, just saying, you know. I'm trying to be reinforcing to you, you know.
That's funny.
What are your influences that draw you into writing? And it doesn't have to be other writers. Is there certain, some people will drive, some people do certain things, and it kind of gives them this surge of, inspiration.
I would say it is other books, other writers. I would say probably equal parts books, actually television, because there's some great television now, and I feel like long-form narrative can be done well on television now with streaming services, and each hour-long episode doesn't have to be perfectly encapsulated and done. So books, television, and then, you know, my friends and family and my day-to-day life are all equal influences there, I would say. So that's nothing too sexy, but that's probably the truth. So, yeah.
Well, sure, you say it is, but I know there's more going on here.
I mean, there are certain writers that I definitely love. One that I love a lot.
Well, besides me, besides me and Dave, you go, you know, remember it's our show, so you got to say, yeah, you guys, of course.
Obviously. But. I thought that was a given, guys. I thought that was just me. No, I think one that influences me a lot that doesn't get enough love is Jim Thompson. He wrote like Pop 1280, The Killer Inside Me, all of those, which he's darker and grittier than my writing. But I love how his prose are beautiful and his books are page-turny, but the prose aren't fancy. They're not, you know, purple prose, and he's not throwing in big words unless he's doing it on rare occasion just to kind of for comedic effect. He says profound things in a very straightforward and plain way while also developing amazing characters and having a page-turning plot. I mean, what an amazing achievement. So within the thriller crime, he's definitely the biggest. But then also, like, I don't know, Nick Hornby was the person that, like, one of the first books I remember loving as a kid. So, and he doesn't write thrillers at all. He writes, you know, I don't know, High Fidelity and, like, young, kind of dirtbag guys trying to find themselves books. So, yeah.
Kind of speaks close to home there, yeah. You know. What you're teaching your career, do you take things from that and put them into your book? Does some of that get into your writing as well?
Actually, not too much. With my books, I try and really be honest, say what I'm thinking, be true to characters, and when I am being a professor, I'm a firm believer in kind of what might be seen as being an old school professor at this point, but I still think is right in that I just try and present various viewpoints, make those different viewpoints arguments to the best of my ability, right? Steel man instead of straw man, all the different viewpoints, and then let the students decide for themselves, right? I'm giving my students and improving their critical thinking skills and helping them learn how to think for themselves and not making those decisions for them versus, so I'm very, not detached when I'm teaching, but I'm trying to be as objective and not letting my personal views influence things as much as possible. And with writing, I don't know, it's like I don't want to be political, so I'm not political, but when you're talking about a character's emotions or how they're feeling or something like that, you have to be fully yourself if the character is like you or if it's not like you. You have to transport yourself into that character's shoes and think honestly what it's like from their point of view. So I'm much more just straightforward with my opinions in my writing or the opinions of the characters, I guess, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, how do you think that changes you? How does that, because when you do that, when you put yourself in the place of your character, then you have to feel the emotions in order to get the correct dialogue and thought. And reaction of that character, in a way, you're living through that. You think, and you might not have if you hadn't written the character. You know what I'm saying?
It
might not have been as personal to you. So when that happens, do you think writing in a process itself, like doing this book, it changes you somewhat?
Yeah, in a great way. I mean, I think writing, especially even reading, does that, right? And then it like lets you live in someone else's shoes. What an amazing thing to, as a human being, you've lived, I can't remember which famous author said it, but like if you read books, you've led 100,000 lives or something like that. I think that's super true. And when you're writing, it's the same thing. It's just you're feeling it more intensely because you're having to come up with what that character is thinking and feeling, and you are in it for longer because, you know, it takes a while to turn out a book. And I think that certainly changes you in that you've seen things through more different people's eyes. You've stood in more people's different shoes. And that's, yeah, of course that's going to change you in a good way.
Of course, I was the great writer that said that.
I thought so. I thought that that was, it was either you or Michael Scott from The Office. I couldn't remember which one, but yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he copies me. He did. Well, so what happens to your character when the book's done? Are they gone? They disappear? Do you ever feel them or hear them again? Or is it over?
Not all equally. I mean, this one I hear a lot because it's very close to me. So I hear it in my own head. Other characters, they don't all hang around equally, which is interesting in retrospect. I don't know if that's indicative of which characters are the best ones. And I are my best creations or not, but some of them hang around with me and others not so much.
They just don't like you.
That could be it. And if your own creations of your own imagination don't like you, oh, man, I don't know what that says. Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah.
That's sad. That's your next book.
I feel like I got your own imaginary characters like coming for you. That sounds terrifying. That's a good mystery, like horror book right there, right?
Yeah, Frankenstein turns on the owner, the maker.
I like it.
You know? Yeah. Well, you never know what's going to happen.
But, right. I caught my.
That's interesting.
It's fine now.
Yeah, well, hey, Andrew, have fun. listen. So. You do social media? Do you do website? Do you do where do you like readers to find you?
Yeah, I have a website, cmcgeebooks.com. Facebook is cmcgeebooks as well. And then actually, we were joking about TikTok, but I do TikTok. cmcgeewriter is my whatever TikTok handle. I'm actually surprised at how much I enjoy creating TikTok content. I don't necessarily like being on there because it just feels like stimulus overload and I'm too old to handle that. But creating like videos and stuff like that is fun. So, yeah. So TikTok, Facebook,
What kind of videos do you do? Like, you know, out there dancing or you have, like what goes on?
You do not want to see me dance. That's a terrible idea. although making an ass out of myself, maybe I could go viral that way. Videos. I do some stuff with books, right? So, I obviously do promo stuff for my novel, but I also, my wife and we have this character that has lived as part of our marriage since we've been together. And I have a voice for it and everything. And it's basically like an extra part of our family, right? That's just an imaginary character in my head, but has dialogues with my wife and daughter on a regular basis. So then we started to have him do some TikTok content. He does some book reviews. He's a dinosaur named Food Baby. And so he reviews books. so it's pretty outrageous. Yeah.
So you've had imaginary friends even in an adulthood.
Right? They're better as an adult, right? More depth, complexity. It's richer imaginary friend life.
Yeah. And do you really have a wife? Is this all true? Or is this?
You would think no, based off of all the things I've just told you. But I actually do. I have a wonderful wife that has been amazing at supporting me with all of my writing. She's always my first reader. And she is often brutal with the feedback, but it always makes the book way, way better. So yeah, my wife Beth deserves a lot of the credit. And actually for this one, my daughter JoJo also deserves some credit. She didn't know she was inspiring me to write about a dad. But yeah, she did.
And so how often do they let you out of the home?
Unsupervised? Not often.
Yeah, unsupervised. Right? Without a jacket.
Usually they want, I know that I have an air tag somewhere on my body that my wife just hasn't told me about. She's tracking all my movements because I can't be trusted on my own.
I don't blame her.
No, you know? I mean, neither do I.
Be safe. I mean, the community's already in turmoil. They don't need another problem.
That's right.
And enough issues.
You've already pointed out the cul-de-sac's probably turned against me at this point. So maybe it's for my own benefit. Maybe somebody from the cul-de-sac can take me out. But my wife's going to be able to track me down because she's got the air tag on my person somewhere.
Well, just, you know, just be careful if she buys a large insurance policy on you. That's
I'm keeping my eyes open for this letter from State Farm.
Don't sign anything. Okay?
Jake from State Farm better stay away from me. I got to keep my eyes peeled.
Well, that's great. Well, we appreciate you being here. And good luck with the writing career. And hopefully everything goes good. And, of course, your book, Owen O'Shea, Stay-at-Home Dad, Wannabe Detective, a novel. And, you know, people get out there and buy it. And he really wants to hear from you.
Okay? I'd love
everything
it.
You can say.
Thanks.
You know, he needs
Thanks,
it all.
Guys. This is great.
Well, thank you, Mr. C. McGee.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.